The Eaton and Palisades Fire are the first and second most destructive fires in Southern California history. The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection estimates over 40,000 acres burned, 12,300 structures deployed, and at least 25 fatalities. And the winds are still quite an issue. They continue to threaten containment. A key force battling those blazes is mass deployment of incarcerated firefighters. The crews are trained in minimum security facilities run by the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitations, the CDCR. They're called fire camps. Participants learn to be first responders, not just for fires, but for other emergencies and disasters. The Guardian's San Levin reports these jobs are voluntary and highly coveted as participants get to leave the traditional prison environment, get meaningful training, and get their sentences shortened in exchange for service. But the programs remain highly controversial. The trainees get incredibly low pay, between $5.80 and $10.24 daily, and an additional 1 hour hourly while responding to the emergencies. An hour, a dollar. Their jobs can threaten their very lives. And while they're released from prison, there aren't enough jobs in the market to employ them as professional firefighters. Ironically, having a prison record can keep them out of those available jobs. Sam Levin says that as of yesterday morning, 1,116 incarcerated people were fighting the fires, with more than 20 incarcerated crews deployed over the last week. Their work is essential. Their lives are at risk. But program critics say their treatment and pay remain as unjust as ever. Sam is on the line with us. He's a senior reporter for The Guardian based in Los Angeles, and he's been on the fire beat since those fires first ignited. Hi, Sam. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Welcoming back to the air here at KALW, Edmund Richardson. He's a former incarcerated firefighter, currently a journalist and filmmaker. He previously served as producer and co-host for KALW's Uncuffed. That's our collaborative podcast between people incarcerated in San Quentin and Solano prisons. He was released in 2023 after 14 years. Edmund, welcome back to KALW.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to be here.
So, in fact, Edmund, let's start with you. I want you to give us a taste from your own experience of what the CDCR firefighters are going through right now. They're on duty 24 hours on, 24 hours off. So tell us about that 24 hours on duty. What is it like?
So typically on a 24-hour on, like we will pull up to a scene, get our objectives, and then like go to work. And that could be cutting fire line for miles. It could be clearing brush for miles. It could be navigating terrain that is crazy to navigate, right? Sometimes we work past 24 hours, like we'll work a 38, we'll work a 48. So we're just consistently doing laborious work throughout the day, throughout our 24 hours.
That's 24 hours or more of adrenaline. I mean, this is not sitting at a desk for 24 hours. That's 24 hours on the job.
Yes.
Wow. That's Sam, some of the firefighters you've talked to, what are they reflecting about the situation on the front lines?
It's very intense. I mean, what we see out there is just severe threats with both of these fires. And, you know, there's now 1,100 incarcerated people who are on the front lines fighting these fires. And so they're doing absolutely vital work embedded with CAL FIRE alongside the other firefighters. And as Edmund said, they're clearing brush, you know, there's flames around them, there's rocks falling, you know, very serious hazards. Several people have died in the program over the years. And so this is life-threatening, serious work that the state relies on to battle these blazes.
And these are not across the board fully formed adults. These are not people 25 and up. There are some quite a bit younger than that who are allowed to train in the program and to serve in the program. I wonder if at age 18, you can understand the potential mortality involved. Is that something you've discussed with anyone, Sam?
Yeah, there's youth who are on the front lines. Dozens have been out over these fires. On Monday, there were 55 youth who were deployed, and those are ages 18 to 25, and they're part of youth programs that the State Department of Corrections runs. And, you know, these are seen as great opportunities for these youth because they get out of that traditional prison environment and they're getting meaningful training and they're doing work that is impactful and saving properties, saving lives. but it's very intense work, and it's, you know, can have a huge impact on people's lives. And so I think that's something that the state has to consider in terms of how it treats these folks and, you know, what kind of care supports they're giving to them during and after they do this incredible service.
Mm-hmm. Edmund, can you answer the same question about the younger people on the lines? I'm just wondering about that feeling of immortality younger people tend to have. Do they really get what's at risk here?
So from my experience, like, I worked alongside them at the Tigre Fire that happened a couple months ago near Georgetown. And this is the Pine Grove hand crew. They're all, I think most of them are juveniles. And for me to see them out there kind of broke my heart. Like, just see their young faces carrying a chainsaw, like working alongside us. I would say that's something that I would never want to put a child, like I would never want to put anybody's child in any type of danger, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is, I don't think they fully comprehend the mortality rate. I don't think they fully kind of take in what they're doing.
And I can also add, you know, I spoke to a formerly incarcerated firefighter who talked about the fact that, you know, he had endured so much in his upbringing and had been exposed to violence at a young age, and how that sort of gave him the sense of fearlessness. And, you know, he was kind of drawn to this job because he was fearless. And I think that made it sort of a good match for his interests and his skills. But at the same time, yeah, it's really serious work. And, you know, those risks have to be taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Sam, what's your sense of what brings most people to make this choice? Incarcerated people who look at what the chances are, look at what the training is like, look at what their options for work after incarceration might be. Who is it who chooses themselves to get into this line of work?
I'm sure Edmund can speak to this as well, but for the folks I've talked to who've gone through this program, one of the key factors is that it's incredibly superior to the traditional prison life. You know, instead of living in crowded cells, indoors, in monotonous schedules, having potentially limited opportunities depending on what prison they're in, they're living out in camps, they're having better food. You know, several described to me just getting access to sleeping on a real proper mattress for the first time, or using an actual plate when doing this program. And so on a basic level, the quality of life through these programs can be far superior to just what is a traditional prison environment. And at the same time, it's really meaningful work. And so this is actually helping the community going out, not just fires, responding to floods, responding to natural disasters in the off season, clearing brush to help fire mitigation. So that is really meaningful. And it has the potential to give them job opportunities on the outside and gives them really good training. We've seen there are significant barriers to getting those jobs on the outside, but it puts people on a path that is potentially very life changing for them. And so people are drawn to that opportunity while inside prison serving a sentence.
Edmund, what went into your decision? What were the pros and cons you considered before going in this direction?
So I initially didn't want to go to fire camp. However, an opportunity came up for me to film the YOPs coming out of Valley State Prison to join this program that they were opening up. So I got an opportunity to actually film and work alongside these youth offenders entering the camp program. And like through that, like I was able to kind of work alongside them and go through their training and their program. And it is outside of like the traditional prison setting that I'm used to. I've been incarcerated for 14 years, and waking up in a 6x9 cell isn't something that I would wish upon anyone. So just being able to be out there in the forest learning new skills was like an amazing eye-opening experience for me.
Well, in fact, tell me what camp was like.
So, I mean, camp was, 180 from prison. Like There were no walls. There were no fences. To some degree, the food was better. Some guys would argue otherwise. It was refreshing to be out in the wilderness, like being able to be connected to nature. And that's something that I've never experienced, like inside prison walls. Mm-hmm. So I would say the camp experience is almost freeing. Like you feel free. Like it's an amazing feeling.
And I'm assuming it's hard work.
So that's like living conditions, right? Compared to what I'm used to. The work is very laborious. I didn't know. It's probably the hardest I've ever worked in my life, to be honest. So we work Monday through Friday on grade, and that is just going out into the community, whether that's mowing, weed whacking, clearing brush for like government officials. Like we'll go out there and do that, or like government organizations will go out there and do that. But the work is laborious. It's a crazy experience.
It sounds like it. Sam, there's someone you interviewed for one of your pieces, and we'll be linking those pieces online at our website. Rashid Stanley Lockhart, and I'm going to give our audience a taste of your article, served at a firehouse at San Quentin in the Bay Area from 2018 to 2020. He was housed outside of prison. He had the same benefits that we were just talking about. He could walk along the bay. He had access to better food. And he said, at the time, I had gratitude for being able to get out of prison. I'll never forget the day my captain picked me up. I got to eat on an actual house plate. It felt so foreign. But his view has changed over time. I look back at it, he says, as involuntary servitude. You're still incarcerated. This is like they're dangling shiny keys over a monkey. That's pretty powerful. Talk more about his experience and how he came to view it that way.
Yeah, he had a unique experience. I learned this week that there are people who are incarcerated who actually serve as municipal firefighters within their prisons. And so this is different than the fire camp. This is living just outside the prison walls and acting as a firefighter for both the prison community and the surrounding community, surrounding city. And so he was responding to house fires. He was responding to issues at correctional officers' homes. He was responding to CPR requests within the prison. So it was a very intense job. And at the time, he really saw the opportunity of getting to leave that prison, having those improved conditions, and getting to do this very impactful work for his life. But he also was on call 24/7, 365 days a year. So this is not a traditional job where you have days on, days off, basic labor protections and labor rights. He said he really appreciated the way that his superiors, fire captains, treated him. But when he looked at it from a system level after leaving the prison and having some time away from the system and thinking about the just extremely meager wages, making essentially $50 a month, he does look back at it as a kind of servitude. You know, he did not have much of a choice there. The choice was either do this job or go back to prison. And so is that involuntary? Of course, it is a voluntary position. But when he thinks about the really impossible choices he had, it puts it into perspective for him.
Yeah. You are listening to Your Call. I'm Angie Quirer. Rose is off today. We're talking about incarcerated firefighter trainees working the front lines alongside the LA firefighters. We're talking with Edmund Richardson, filmmaker, journalist, and alum of KALW's Uncuffed program. Sam Levin is the author of two pieces at The Guardian exploring the CDCR firefighting program. Let us bring you into the conversation. Our phone lines are open for your questions. 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. If you prefer email, we're watching the inbox. That's yourcall@kalw.org. What do you think about the firefighting program? There was an opportunity in front of California voters in the last election to put an end to this sort of servitude within the prisons, and that was rejected by a good portion of the electorate. So How did you vote on that? What did you think about that opportunity to change the system? Again, that's 866-798-TALK or 866-798-8255. Our episodes are available on our podcast page at yourcallradio.org. You can sign up for our newsletter while you're there. If you have a show idea for us, you can use the same phone lines, 866-798-8255, or drop us a line, yourcall@kalw.org. This is Your Call. I'm Angie Carr. We'll be right back. It's Your Call. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Angie Cuero. Edmund, let's talk about the other firefighters, incarcerated firefighters that you worked alongside. What sort of general opinion did you get talking to them about the program? And did they offer any thoughts about, you know, what might make it more equitable or fair?
Right. That's a good question. Working alongside my crew, just being out on a fire, like I would always hear, like, we're doing a lot of work and we're getting paid so little. And they always felt like, they always likened it to a form of slavery, right? Mm-hmm. like the amount of work that we were doing on a day-to-day basis. For example, at the Park Fire, we worked at that fire for 31 days. We had to do all the grunt work. Every assignment that was assigned to us was because paid hand crews did not want to do them. And that always just made me and my team feel like we're expendable. Like we are solely here to do the hard labor that others do not want to do. So just speaking on their behalf, this is like a lot of people don't know this. But this is something that I experienced firsthand as first saw on my crew. There were so many times where we had to recut someone else's handline because they half-assed it. Mm. So we end up doing our work and then others' works. And that always like just rubbed us the wrong way. And like, yeah, we would have conversations after our shift was over about like what needs to change, like within CDCR and how we operate alongside Cal Fire. And it was always just like, we need respect and treated with dignity every time we step out there and risk our lives to save community structures and people's lives.
That's really alarming to hear about that level of ineptitude. I mean, is your sense that these jobs weren't being done right because of a lack of training or lack of oversight? Any insight as to what was going on there?
I can't say for certain, but I would say it's how can I complete this job if I have to cut, say, 400 feet of line? Mm-hmm. And that is an 8-foot scrape. Or an 8-foot cut, 4-foot scrape to bare mineral soil. So recreating a fire break, mm-hmm. right? And if I'm being honest, like some crews don't want to cut 400 feet in a couple hours. They'll cut 2 feet and be satisfied with that. And then we, the incarcerated fire crew, would have to come behind them and widen it out, clear it out further. And that was just always rub us the wrong way. Like, this is not our job. This was not our assignment. Why are we doing it?
Yeah. Sam, can you talk more about how labor is divided? How are the incarcerated people integrated? You know, because from that description, it sounds grossly unfair.
It depends on whether you're responding on an off season or if you're responding to an emergency. In the last week, the fire camp crews have been embedded with Cal Fire, but they have been doing this extreme sort of grunt work, as Edmund is describing it. And so they do work alongside Cal Fire firefighters in the emergencies. But when they're not in the emergencies, they are doing this very sort of intense, laborious grunt work. You know, one person I interviewed who did this job about 10 years ago while incarcerated, she described it as sort of doing the dirtiest jobs, the jobs that no one else wants to do. And that is really the thorough work of, you know, clearing brush every inch, you know, creating those that distance and fire mitigation. And so it is really intense physical labor. And, you know, once they are doing that job, it is a voluntary job they choose to do, but they don't have a choice but to do it well, right? And to do exactly what is asked of them, of course. And so in a traditional job, you have some rights. You might have a union representing you where you can speak out and raise concerns if you're working too many hours or you're doing specific work that feels dangerous to you. Obviously, these are folks who are still incarcerated. They're still under the control of the state. They are still serving prison sentences. So they simply don't have those rights in the way our society functions.
Mm-hmm. And there is, I'm gathering from what happened with Proposition 6, which I mentioned earlier, that was the ballot measure that would have banned involuntary servitude for people in California prisons, and was 53% of voters rejected that. I think that's of a piece with the idea that if people are in jail or prison, well, they deserve it. You know, that's what they earned to get there. So we're not going to sit here and worry about whether they're being treated fairly on whatever job. Is that an attitude that you've encountered, that you think that's a legit thought?
Certainly, that is potentially what is behind the failure of Proposition 6, which would have abolished involuntary servitude in prisons. I think we're in a moment in our society where there is a real return to tough on crime, calls for expansion of mass incarceration, you know, calls for being tougher on people who are committing crimes and tougher on people who are incarcerated. And we see that even in California, which has a, you know, liberal reputation. And so that absolutely is a factor in how people think about this issue, that this is punishment, they are serving their time. But I do think it's important to think about the reality of the fact that these folks will come home. They're serving these sentences, they're towards the end of their sentence, they're coming home. And if we want people to succeed when they come home, the best thing we can do for them is to treat them well, give them opportunities, and make it as easy as possible for them to reenter society. And part of that comes from having proper treatment, being treated well, being healthy, having good treatment while incarcerated and serving time.
Mm-hmm. If you're listening or just tuning in now, that is journalist Sam Levin. He is with The Guardian. There are two of his articles that provoked this conversation. You'll find those online at your call. Also talking to Edmund Richardson. He came up through KALW's Uncuffed program, and he's currently a filmmaker and journalist. And, you know, I want to stay with you, Sam, for just a moment and talk about how this program evolved, because now you're saying that at times as many as 30% of the wildfire force in the state is made up of incarcerated people. How did the state come to rely so heavily on the incarcerated firefighters?
For decades, the state has relied on incarcerated people to do this labor, and it's gotten more extreme through time as we've had increasing fire dangers, climate catastrophe, longer fire seasons, more intense fire seasons, more devastating fires, exemplified this week by the horrific fires across Los Angeles County. And so it is absolutely dependent on this labor force, and it profits from it. You know, this is labor that they are getting that is in essence free or very, very low, right? If folks are making, you know, $10 a day plus an hour on these fires, compare that to what firefighters who are not incarcerated are making. And so this is how the state balances the budget, and it depends on this. And as there's been some movement to remove people from prisons and reduce the prison population, there are fewer incarcerated firefighters. And in recent years, there's been questions about that. Do we have enough? Pushes to see whether we need more incarcerated people doing this work. And so this is a very sort of volatile situation, and we are relying on this labor force that is very precarious.
Edmund, what did you hear from the people that you worked side by side with? If you did any follow-up with them, and I don't know if you did they or did you actively look for firefighter work once you got out of prison? And did you find there was opportunity there? Did they find there was opportunity out there?
Good question. So before I paroled, I submitted a resume and application to a couple hand crews out here. I know a lot of guys do want to pursue employment with Cal Fire. There just isn't So there's only a couple ways that you can get into employment with CAL FIRE. That is going through the Ventoria program down in LA. It's an 18-month program, kind of runs you through everything that you need to know about the fundamentals of firefighting. Good program. The problem with that program is only a select few can be accepted. And I think the other one is just applying yourself. And I opted for the second one. I applied myself. I had an interview this Saturday. It was pushed back because the fire is down in LA to the following weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping to gain employment with CAL FIRE. I wish the process was more straightforward. It was more accessible to formerly incarcerated firefighters. Just thinking about like resources and making it more efficient to get us into this line of work.
Yeah. Well, in fact, Sam, you talked to at least one person who came out and confronted something that's quite ironic. She trained for firefighting while she was in prison and came out to a world where she couldn't get a job in firefighting because she'd been in prison. I mean, that's almost laughable.
Yeah, and that's a lot of people's experiences. There have been efforts over recent years to try to make these jobs more accessible. And so a law was passed in 2020 that was helping give people the opportunity for expungement after they've served in these programs. But it's fairly limited. It doesn't apply to all convictions. Certain people are just not eligible for it. And as Edmund mentioned, there's a couple programs that do this targeted work. The Anti-Recidivism Coalition, based here in LA, runs the Ventura Training Center, which is a program that trains people and gets them set up for jobs after they've gone through this. But not everyone has access to these programs. They are limited. And so many people really struggle. And in our society, we make it very challenging for people with felonies to get any kind of work, including firefighting jobs and including EMT certifications and other certifications you need to do this line of work. So it's very challenging. And there's absolutely no guarantee, despite a strong record of doing this work in prison and getting this training, that you'll be able to get employment on the outside, despite the fact that we absolutely need these jobs. We have shortages of firefighters, clearly evident in the fires this week in LA.
Is it your impression, Sam, that the prisoners are given at least a fair estimate of their chances to get work? Are they given unrealistic ideas about whether this will mean work for them on the outside?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. I would be curious to hear how folks think about that and whether there is strong communication with them about what their options exactly look like. I know in general, incarcerated people often struggle with reentry. We don't make it super easy for people to prepare to come home, you know, just in terms of their plans, their housing, financial support. All of that is absolutely a great challenge and a big problem in our society nationwide. And so I would imagine they face all sorts of barriers and communication problems and just difficulties understanding what their options are. And certainly it could be improved.
What's your sense, Sam, that the firefighters, professional firefighters who are on the lines, what's your impression of the relationship they have with the incarcerated folks who are out there?
My sense from what I've heard is that it's a very good relationship. I think the firefighters deeply respect the incarcerated firefighters who are working with them and the labor they're doing. I've definitely spoken to incarcerated firefighters who talk about the respect they've gotten throughout that. And, you know, also from community members who see them saving their homes and helping them in emergencies. And so I think there is a lot of respect for that. I have interviewed some formerly incarcerated women who did the program who said, you know, there was some disrespect, you know, a decade or so ago, partly just the sexism of firefighting. And that could be an aspect that played into their sort of experiences and perceptions. But I think the firefighting crews from CAL FIRE, of course, depend on these people. And so I think there is a lot of respect for their absolutely vital work.
When you talk to the various groups that are working on improving the situation for the, I guess we can call them firefighter trainees, for lack of a better word, what's your sense of the progress that they're making? What kind of reforms are they looking for?
I think everyone would like to see these folks get paid proper wages. Proposition 6, which failed, would have made a big difference in moving forward on that front and potentially paving the way for people to get proper wages for all kinds of jobs behind bars, not just firefighting. Incarcerated people do vital work within the prison system, cleaning, cooking, all the jobs that help the prison run. And so I think there's been big push to treat that work as legitimate work that it is and get people the protections and pay that they deserve. I think we haven't seen much progress on that in the political climate we're in. However, I think the light that is being shined on this program right now, people nationwide and internationally are really interested and looking at this program. And I think there will be pressure on lawmakers. And I think lawmakers are already talking about, ways to improve their lives and improve this program. So I think we might see activity on that moving forward.
Edmund, we're talking about how to make these programs better. Aside from the obvious, which would be, raising the wages, what else would you like to see done that would make this a more equitable and, a more a finer job for those who are training for it?
Right. So I think one of my ideas was to create a direct pipeline from the CAMP program directly into CAL FIRE. And that could be having different administration from different hand crews come up, interview the guys while they're at camp, and create like a hiring process straight from camp to CAL FIRE.
Yeah, that makes sense. When we're talking about, I just lost track of my thought. I hate when I do that. Sam, going back to you, when you were talking to the firefighters that are there with the program, is there any dropout rate? Are they sticking with it because it's the best thing on offer, or do some of them just say, this is not worth it?
That's a great question. I actually don't know the answer to that. I think that, this is, as I've said, such a good opportunity in terms of living conditions, and just ways to spend your day that I think that a lot of people stick with it. However, I do know that people get injured on the job, and sometimes people are put out because of that. Years ago, I did a story on someone who nearly lost his life doing that work on the fire. I believe some debris basically fell on his head. He had to be airlifted out. This is really intense labor that is very, very dangerous. And so some people don't end up sticking with it because they're injured. And there are definitely injured people who stop doing the program because they physically can't.
I want to look at one of the quotes from one of your articles, Sam. The executive director of Sister Warriors Freedom Coalition, the executive director said about the firefighting wages, we're doing this heroic, crucial work, but many people inside cannot support their family, can barely afford to just get hygiene supplies for themselves. Nobody is saving money with wages for when you go home. Nobody's able to send money to cover the expenses their children are incurring. So either on the financial front or on other fronts, how can people support the incarcerated firefighters who are on the front lines right now?
Yeah, the Anti-Recidivism Coalition, which runs one of these programs, has been fundraising for the youth in particular to support them currently, the folks who are on the front lines, both in helping them in their commissary and also helping them get set up for after they leave prison. And so that's one group that has been fundraising at this moment. And I've seen other fundraisers floating around for people's commissary who are just doing this work and are currently incarcerated on the front lines. And I think there are lots of groups who are going to be advocating bigger picture for policy and better conditions for them and just better supports and improvements to the program and more job opportunities. So I think we'll see a lot of interest in that moving forward.
Edmund, last word from you, and that would be if you were to say something to your fellow firefighters who are on the line right now working in subpar conditions and not being paid well, what would you say to them right now?
I think one of the things that I've always told them is to look out for one another while they're out there, despite the work they're doing. Safety first, communicate, and yeah, just stick together and take care of one another.
You've both been great. Thank you so much. Our guests have been journalists Sam Levin and Edmund Richardson. Earlier, we spoke with Chrissy Kiefer and Stella Adelman of Dance Mission Theater. If you've missed any parts of that collection of conversations, or if you want to check out Your Call's previous shows, visit yourcallradio.org. Kevin Vance has been at the board today. Nina Kissinger produced the hour. I'm Angie Cuero in for Rose Aguilar. Thanks for tuning in to Your Call.